This podcast is intended for mature audiences.
It also contains two British people talking about sex.
Chris.
Sarah?
It's Halloween.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Hello!
Ooh, hello!
What was that?
I'm a scary ghost!
Or something. I don't know. What the hell?
Welcome to Tea Bags and Joysticks, the spooky, kinky video game podcast, apparently.
No, this is not going to be spooky at all. This is not going to be a spooky episode, but I'm Chris.
And I'm Si. Well, you say it's not going to be spooky. Well, scary maybe, depending on who you talk to, because I know some people get kind of scared off by the main topic of today.
I don't think people are kind of scared off the main topic. I think it's more
what? I'm just gonna leave you and see where this goes to start with.
I was going to say afraid, but that's kind of the same word.
Exactly, that's my point. So there's definitely been people that I've spoken to who, when I've turned around and gone, hey, I'm a Switch, and they've gone, yeah, no.
I mean, I think, yeah, that's not, I still don't think it's scared, but they're put off, maybe.
They run fast enough. Mm. Or maybe that's just my charming personality.
Anyway, yes, the topic today is
switching. Or being a Switch, and what that really means, because I think some people can be a bit funny about it because they get this preconceived idea about roles. I mean, no, ones, not a Nintendo Switch.
Red and blue ones?
Not a Nintendo Switch. But anyway, we shall come around to the topic. But before we get to the topic, what's the tea, Chris?
A tea today. I want to talk about Eternals, Marvel's Eternals.
Do we not have a 5-minute Marvel for that?
No, I'm not talking about the contents of the film. I'm not talking about trailers or anything like that. I'm talking about, in particular, the director of Eternals, Chloe Zhao.
Okay.
She basically insisted Marvel not to censor LGBT content in her film.
Good.
Overseas.
Good.
Yeah.
That's how it should be.
That's what we want to hear.
It's not going to go down well with Marvel or their publishing partners, but that's how it should be.
Yep.
We need more of that shit.
Her quote exactly was, if they didn't tell the story on its whole with the gay character's husband and their son, there's no point putting that on screen.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
I can 100% get behind this.
Mm-hmm.
About time we had more representation. It's time that they actually started, you know, putting their money where their mouth is when they go, oh, hey, we support the LGBTQ community. Do you, though? Mm-hmm. But no, like, yeah. I'm glad to actually see a director turn around and say that. I mean, whether that's going to translate into the way it actually happens, that's a whole other matter.
Yeah, I don't know how it's actually going to turn out, but, you know, Eternals opens just next week. So,
you see, that close?
Yeah. It would be exactly 1 week from this episode comes out.
Wow, okay. Okay, I didn't realise it was quite that close.
It is close.
So, okay. I mean, hopefully we see that get reflected overseas, but I'll be very honest, I'm not holding my breath. Because we already know that Marvel and Disney have censored significant portions of the MCU overseas.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. But good on her for coming out and going, like, don't pull this shit with my movie. One thing I think more directors ought to do is turn around and go, hey, you know, if you're going to alter the movie overseas, I'm going to disown it and make you remove my name from it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that should absolutely be a thing. And it's been done before. Like, it is not the first time that a director has done a movie and gone, you know what, I'm not willing to put my name to this.
Yeah, either you show it as it is, mm-hmm. or, yeah, this is not my movie.
I think more directors need to start wielding that, because they are trading somewhat on the director's name.
Oh, absolutely. Like Chloe Zhao just won an Oscar.
Yeah. So,
absolutely. So, but yeah, I think that's tea for me.
Fair enough.
What's on your tea, sir?
On my tea this week is people need to learn when to stop.
Right.
So I have spent the last...
Yeah, that is not uncommon. Yeah, that is quite a consistent problem with people.
Let me rephrase.
They don't know when to stop.
People need to learn when to stop when it's a good thing. So I just finished reading Ready Player 2, which is the sequel to the Ready Player 1 book. Now, Ready Player 1, you either loved it or you hated it because like you loved the references and the pop culture and everything else that went into it, or you didn't. Mm-hmm. In terms of the way it was written, not the best book in the world, but definitely a decent read.
Sure, yes, sir.
Ready Player 2, however, well...
Well?
Fan fiction is maybe a harsh criticism to level, but it's how it felt.
Wow. Wow.
And I don't mean good fan fiction, because there is such a thing as good fan fiction. No.
Oh, yeah.
No. The characterizations made no fucking sense based on what we knew. The emotional cliffhanger. There was like one or two emotional points in there that did get to me. But not because of everything else that was going on, but because in one section it was the way that particular scene was described just hit me in a way right now that, you know, I'm a little bit sensitive to generally. And then the other one was entirely because of the work done by Ready Player One and absolutely fuck all to do with what was done in that second book. It's bad. And I called the ending from about page 40 or 50. It's like, it's bad. Like, I'm sorry. Okay, so... And you know what's worrying? Apparently there's a second movie in production, or at least in the early stages.
I mean, Ready Player, I haven't read the series. I've seen the movie, but from what I know, the movie is quite a departure from the books, isn't it?
So it was, and there were definitely things in the movie that irritated me that they took out.
Right, so.
But I understood it, because when you move mediums, there's going to be changes, and this made sense.
Okay.
The only way this is going to work, if they take this into a movie, is they need to completely rewrite the book.
Just ignore the book.
Like, the references and everything is still there.
Yes, sir.
But it's just rough. It really is. Although, I will say, there was an intro. So let's put a little spoiler, like, notice in here sort of thing. There's this whole thing about, like, the VR gets upgraded even further to the point where it's essentially a synaptic input.
Right.
And so everything feels real as opposed to simulated.
Okay.
And there's an interesting thing where it's like people were able to record their experiences and share them. And there's a fun divergence where it talks about how this had been done with things like pornography. So people were getting to experience, like... male-female sex, female-female, male-male, like, I don't know, like, non-binary male, so, like, any combination you can think of.
Okay.
Yeah. And experience sex as these genders. And that was kind of fascinating to me as a concept. Because of that whole idea of being able to get that perspective of it from a sort of angle and identity and sort of... perspective is the word I'm looking for.
I'll give you that
yes, sir. You can never live or understand otherwise. And there was a whole then separate section about how it improved empathy for people from different minorities and different backgrounds and cultural standing, etc., because you got to experience certain sections of their, like, snapshots of their life. That was kind of cool.
Yep.
And you couldn't have got that bit without the trash either side. But unfortunately, there's that much trash either side that good luck finding that diamond if you're not right. It got to the point I was hate reading it. I was literally reading it to see how bad it got.
Yeah, okay.
So,
yeah.
But No, please learn when to stop when you're on a good thing. Like, Ready Player One, like, it came in just that right moment that it hit just that right amount of sort of cultural nostalgia. Mm-hmm. That cultural nostalgia that everyone was tapping for that time, you know? That really did pull you through. And where it did lull a bit, it's just like, okay, this, I get it. You've got to have a little bit of a dip here and there, etc. Made sense. This entire book's a dip. Ready Player Two is named. Just swerve it. Just like be happy that Ready Player One ended where it did, and go, you know what? That was a fun ride.
I mean, some books just don't work with a sequel. I think Ready Player One could have worked with a sequel. It's just, well, it looks like it just didn't write it well.
Yeah,
I think it could have. Yeah, I think there was potential for a sequel.
Yeah, it's just let it lie.
Yes, sir.
No, seriously, it's terrible.
Yeah, fair.
There might be a little bit tacked on the after the outro, where I just kind of go into what the plot is. You've been warned.
I will mention it when I do the outro credits as well.
I just went on a rant. I'm sorry, people.
I think a lot of people here, it's actually here to listen to we rant.
Yeah, like everyone's used to me going on a random tangent at this point, I think. But yes, with the tea.
Is it time for the bag?
Shall we do the tea bag?
Yes, sir.
Which this week we're talking about Switching.
Switching. Yes.
So not Nintendo Switch, as you alluded to.
No. What kind of Switch are we talking about?
So we're talking about Switch when it comes to role in BDSM. And I guess maybe we're talking not necessarily just about switching, but again, about roles in general, but switching is kind of where I want to focus.
Okay. Do we need to explain what switching means?
I mean, it never hurts to give the working definition that we're working under, I guess. So in this case, like, switching is when someone will be both dom and sub, depending on the scenario and the scene in which they find themselves. Yeah. And that might be different based on what kink they're doing, who they're with, or it might just be different based on the time of freaking day.
Yeah, it could be within the same scene.
Yeah,
that you do both.
Oh yeah,
that's generally called flipping. But yeah,
see, I always think of flipping as something different.
Oh yeah, you do.
I always think of flipping. I always think of flip flop, fucking when you say flipping. So, like, changing the position and changing who's on top, who's on bottom, etc. Like, I always think of that. Because I think the other thing that's important to point out is, because people do get this back to front, you can be verse and switch. They are two very separate things. And you can be submissive and a top, and a top and a bottom. Dominant and a bottom.
Yeah, some people do use the words top and bottom for dominant and submissive, and that's a terminology thing. I don't like that, but I know some very, very prominent people in the community, in the scene, who uses it that way.
No. Because that's the thing. Even when I'm submissive, I like to top. Even when I'm dominant, I like to bottom.
Yeah. It just confuses everyone. You're becoming, you know, a top bottom or a bottom top. I'm like, no, that makes no fucking sense.
I mean, the only time that ever makes sense is in a threesome.
Are you a top top or are you a bottom bottom?
The only time that ever makes sense is in a threesome. And we also have a word for that. It's called versatile.
Yeah.
That or the sandwich meat. And so I think maybe it's worth talking about why I wanted to hit on this, which is the last couple of times that we've got together.
Yeah, yes, sir.
I have had a significant amount of time where I've wanted to be on the other side of the coin.
Sure.
As it were. And that's always a bit of a strange experience for me. And I think that that's something that you can sometimes find a little jarring, depending on how it comes up.
It depends, yeah.
And so
we'll get into details in a bit.
And so I wanted to kind of just get into, I guess, the ins and outs of kind of how that comes down and how that's a thing. Because I think from conversations that I've had on some of the websites and apps and, you know, whatever other mediums you want to use, some people get a little bit almost tribal about roles and the idea that someone will switch and that will be quite central, that they're very happy going either way, can at times be met with quite some hostility.
I've heard of this. I've never really personally came across it.
Right.
If not, you know, a person can do both, but, you know, a person doing both to the same person?
Yeah.
I think that is a little bit rarer.
So, I actually understand somewhat people being put off by doing both with the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can kind of understand that idea of, I want to be sub to this person, and I want this person to always have that dominant persona over me. I can kind of see that.
Yeah.
I don't 100% understand it. I can see how that kind of locks in type of thing.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's all part of, like, that helps them get down into subspace or into dom space, depending which side they're going on. I can see, yeah, okay. But I've literally had guys, and this has happened to me in the last week or so as well, where we'll be talking, and they'll turn around and go, like, oh, I'm more X, you know, I'm more sub, I'm more dom.
Yeah.
Yes. In this case, it was sub. And I turn around to them and say, okay, well, I'm Switch, but I tend to dom more. And they're like, oh, no, I don't play with Switches. Huh?
Yeah, what's that got to?
Oh, no, I don't play with Switches. They don't know what they want. It's just like, no. I know what I want.
Yeah, we perfectly do know what we want.
It's like, I quite distinctly know what I want. I knew you were a sub before I started talking to you. I very distinctly know what I want right now.
But no, I mean, that is... I think that is quite, forgive me for saying, nonsense.
I agree. I completely agree. And I say this as someone like who, with you, has had those moments of confusion where I'm not sure which side of it I want to be on.
Mm-hmm.
But I say this with you because I know you also switch and you're also comfortable to switch. And that when I'm in that headset, yeah, I've got the fucking headset. Ready Player One headset on my fucking mind. Jesus Christ. See, it's that bad, it's infecting everything else. When I'm in that headspace, shall we say,
yes,
where I'm not sure what side of things I want to be dealing with sort of thing, like, me and you will have a conversation about that and sort of see how things roll.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say it took me a long time to be able to do that with you as well.
That is true, yes, sir. Yeah, that is true. It took quite a while.
Like, that's something that comes about because there's a lot of mutual trust there.
Yeah, think about it. Yeah, you're right.
But I have literally had people that are like, oh, no, like, I'll never play with someone that switches. And I'm like, what? Why?
Yeah, why?
It's like, surely, if anything, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion... Surely, if anything, someone who switches is likely to be able to have a better idea of what they're doing on either side, really, but particularly as a dom, because they've been on the receiving end of what they're giving out.
Yeah, true. I mean, I'm not saying being a total sub or a total dom is bad. Not at all.
No, not at all. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm just saying, like... I know one thing that I get from being Switch, and when I do have my submissive time, is that, like, when it comes around to me being a dom, is I actually have a much better understanding of the other side of what I'm doing.
Yeah. I mean, the fact is, over the years, people in the community change roles all the time.
But you see, this is the other thing, because I see people do this. I've seen people do this.
Yeah,
and they so quickly change the label, and it's like, yeah, okay, if that's the label you want, that's fine. I'm not going to argue with that. But they won't even entertain the idea of putting Switch on there anywhere. And it's like, why? You clearly enjoy both.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to shame anyone here. Like, if that's the label that works for you, that's the label that works for you, that's fine. But I've literally seen people and had people say to me, it's just like, oh yeah, it's just like, I like to dom as well, but like, I'll only ever tell people I'm myself. I'm like, well, you're just denying yourself at this point. You know?
I think there is a problem with the scene. It's not a problem, but it's just a characteristic of the scene mm-hmm. that there are more doms than subs in general.
Is there?
No, not more subs than doms. I beg your pardon.
Well, no, I don't even necessarily agree with that.
I think there is.
I think it depends where you are.
I think that is a general conception, though. People do feel like there are more subs than doms. And so if people want to dom, they can quite easily find a sub. Whereas if you're a sub, it's more difficult to find play, I feel like.
No.
Don't agree? No. Okay.
I tend to find it harder to find subs than I do doms.
Do you? Yeah. Okay.
But again, I think this is a geographic thing.
Hmm.
But I mean, I don't know. There's this weird misconception that happens with it.
I don't know. I think if you talk to most people on the scene, they would agree there are more subs than doms.
But again, you'd like, bear in mind that where I live, I'm further from a scene.
Yes, sir.
So yeah. This is why I say I think it's a geographic thing.
Okay.
But it's weird to me. Like, so let me ask you this then. What do you think is something that you have an appreciation from through switching that you maybe wouldn't if you were like, because you predominantly identify as a switch sub. Is that fair?
Yes, I think that's accurate.
So like, if you were to only identify as a sub and you were only to be submissive, what's something that like you think you would be missing out from, or that like an experience that you think you've only really got because you've been able to do that switching?
Wow.
I'm here with the deep ones tonight. And I'm not talking about holes.
I mean, there are a lot of skills that come with doming.
Mm.
There is a lot of kind of management. Is management the right word?
I don't know.
Maybe.
Is synergy following it?
A lot of logistics that you've got to deal with.
Oh, God, he's in the corner.
You're a dom. No, it's true though.
I mean, for me, I know one thing that I definitely have got out of it is a much better grasp when it comes to things like impact play.
Okay.
Because it's entirely one thing when you're just giving it. When you understand how it hits, basically, as a sub, like, you have a very different appreciation for what you're doing, I think.
All right.
Because, like, I've been quite heavily flogged before, and it wasn't until that I properly got it from a sub's perspective, because it was like, I'm not gonna say it was ages into me getting into flogging and what have you, but there was definitely like a delay between me doing like the flogging and being the floggy.
Fair enough. I think that's the case with most kinks. Basically, you do get a better appreciation if you have done it both sides.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's the case with, say, bondage, that kind of thing. You know, oh yeah, you don't do this because, you know, your hands would lose circulation or something like that.
I mean, I'd argue with bondage, if you're being the dom in that situation, you're not monitoring that, you've got bigger problems.
But yeah, after you've subbed, you will have more of an appreciation.
Mm. I mean, with that said, though, even as, like, maybe this is a good time to point out, like, even though I switch, and I'm, like, I identify as a dom switch, but, like, I definitely lean more towards the switch side of that, I think, especially these days.
Yeah.
I think it is something that has changed as I've got older. There are still kinks that I'm just not willing to engage with as a submissive. Like, my kink list as a dom and my kink list as a submissive are very different.
That's fair enough.
So, for example, like, I don't mind doing water sports as a dom. It's not my thing as a sub. It's just really not my thing as a sub.
Uh huh.
And that's not to talk down anyone whose it is, because, you know, I'm quite happy to do it as a dom. It just doesn't work for me. It doesn't turn me on when I'm being submissive, you know?
You do realise who you're talking to.
Well, no, I know. Right? I mean, you've seen me, you've like been on both sides of this with me. It's just like, it doesn't work for me.
That's it.
Like, literally, like, you're the person I tried it with as a submissive, and I found, like, no, that's not one that's going to work for me at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, regardless of.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, there are lots of ways of doing water sport, and I don't think we have tried every one of them. So you may still find something that you like as a sub.
No, and that's fair.
I'm not going to rule it out.
No, absolutely not. And it's not something that I would put a complete bar on, but it's not something that I'm going to be doing for me, sort of thing. Like, if someone says to me, oh, like, what do you like as a sub? It's just like, well, that's not going to be on my list.
Yeah. I mean, I used to be like that, and then I got into it.
Yeah, and that's fair, and that's completely fair. But it's one of those things, and I think it is, like, important to point out, like, different things work for different people in different positions when you're switching. Like, bondage works for me in either position.
Mm-hmm.
Flogging will work for me in either position. Water sports does not. You know?
Yeah, and that's completely natural. I don't see a problem with that. I don't think there's anything good to rush over.
No, absolutely not. I don't think there is, but some people find that a bit strange. And some people are like, well, if you're into it, surely you're into it all the time. I was like, no, not at all.
Yeah. No.
But and then some people just run away screaming when they say the word switch. And I'm just like, whatever.
But maybe they just really hate Mario.
I do genuinely think that sometimes I found it most often with dominants that get funny about it. And I don't...
Okay, yeah.
I get that and I don't, because on the one hand, someone who switches, especially someone who's more dominant switch, is probably going to be a bit harder to get in towards subspace. I know that I'm difficult to get to subspace, because I need a dom that can be very firm, that can kind of bring me down into subspace and keep me down in subspace. And that does mean a bit more work for the dom. But on the flip side of that, in my experience, it's most often the doms that are machismo doms, as I call them. Like, they're all about the look and the attitude and the being a man. And the guys I generally have no time for anyway. But like,
style over substance.
Yeah, it's like all these people that, like, it's basically toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
yeah,
sweetie, no.
Oh yeah, I can totally,
like,
see
you
that.
You want to be this? You want to be this big, bad, like, dominant, controlling the room, controlling the bedroom, like, you know, and someone who can do both scares you. It's like,
I know, right? Like, there's a reason why people are looking to sub to you, and that's giving you the control. You already have that. You don't need to prove anything for saying you can't dom outside this scene.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just a weird one to me, because it's just like, I don't get it. I don't get why people have a problem with it.
No, the vast majority of people don't. And if you do have a problem, then...
jog on. Sorry, jog on.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I do think...
Think again, okay.
But let's go to the other extreme of this. I think some of the best sessions I've had... Like, I've definitely had some really fucking good sessions as a dom and as a sub, but, like, some of the best sessions I have with people that I've built that trust up to do both. And that's admittedly a rare thing for me. Like, even though, like, I do switch, like, it takes me a lot more to get submissive with someone than it does to dominate. But when I do get into that space with someone that I can switch, my God, are those scenes rewarding. And, like, to me, that's one of the biggest things I've got from being switched as well. Like, some of the best scenes I've ever had have been with guys that, like, we can flip it back and forth, like, from session to session sort of thing in the same fucking time, you know? Like... Literally, it's just like, I will be your submissive for the next, like, two orgasms, and then you're my bitch, you know? And, like, that's been a fucking amazing, like, set of times before, you know?
Okay, so is it is it the switching that you're particularly enjoying, or is it just, you know, the deeper connection you have had with that person? Because you've already mentioned you need a deep connection in order to do this.
I mean, I'd say there's an element of both, but to be fair, like, being able to do a switch scene, like, yeah, it does take me a bit more to get down there, but, like, being able to do that switch scene, like, you get to play in both headspaces.
Yeah.
And, yeah, sometimes that can be a little bit confusing, but if you gel in the right way with the right person that can let you do that, you end up with a much more well-rounded and satisfying session that kind of puts both sides of the headspace,
well,
I don't want to say to rest, but like it satisfies them both, sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's not what you're looking for. Sometimes you just want to go really, really deep in one space.
Well, yeah, and that's a session where I'm not going to have that switch session with someone. That's a session where I'm going to say to someone that I'm in the position that I can be submissive with, or I can be dominant with, like, this is the direction I'm going.
I appreciate it. That's not what everybody's looking for all the time.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I mean, there's a friend of ours that we both did a switch session with that was just freaking insane. But yeah, like, that was 2 years ago, and it's just like, to this day, like, I'm not going to lie, that's still in my wank bank. You know, I'll be very honest about that. And it's just like, this particular individual, like, got it immediately and was right there for it in both directions. And it's just like, okay, we're rolling here. We know what we're doing.
Yeah.
I remember not getting much sleep that night. I remember being very tired enough. The morning after. Because I will say that switch sessions tie me out a lot more because of the shifting headspace.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's definitely
a thing.
Is
that time to talk about headspace?
Yeah, let's talk about headspace. There's because this is something I was going to come on to, because that's maybe the main problem I see with switching is kind of transferring.
Yeah. Yeah. Depending on the day, I can find it really difficult to flip.
Mm.
Despite the name, is sometimes not just like a light switch that you can just flip.
No, I get that. And you've said to me before, like, you find it more difficult going in one direction than the other. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm mostly a sub, and I find going from a dom space to a subspace is easy for me. Going the other way, it takes a little bit of work.
And it's interesting because, for me, it entirely comes down to how much I trust the person.
Mm.
If I'm going from dom to subspace, it'll be a case of, right, give me a minute or so just to compose myself, and then start putting me down, and then I'll be there.
Yeah.
And I can definitely come back to a dom space quicker than I can get to a subspace, but I don't seem to have that same, what's the word? Process, I guess?
Trajectory.
Of going, because for you it's very much a process. Like if I want you to dom me,
yeah,
there's very much a conversation that needs to happen beforehand, and very much a kind of setup to build you up into that space beforehand. And sort of, I simultaneously, as I'm building you up, kind of put myself down there initially and then let you take over from there.
I mean, also, we have a protocol.
Yeah.
I don't just randomly just flip
no,
the scene.
That's
not something I do.
No. And this is, no, that's fair. Like, let's not mean you have to be a bratty sub, because you're not, but like, But what I mean is, like, there's a definite kind of rebalancing that has to occur.
Yeah,
whereas, for me, I can quite happily slide between the two if I know where I'm going, sort of thing.
I mean, if it's a thing that we agree that we were doing, then, you know, that's probably a different matter.
And I do wonder if part of that with you is the fact that I am your sir, like, 90% of the time. Like, even in our day-to-day relationship at this point, like, we have acknowledged that, like, I am your sir the majority of the time these days.
Yeah, like even if we don't define it as a TPE.
Yeah, but, like, I'm, well, no, exactly, like, we aren't TPE, but, like, we nearly always have some level of role somewhere without realizing it, even when we're not being kinky. And I think that maybe that has some level of play with that, but I don't know whether you get that with other people.
So with other people, switching mid-scene, in mid-session, is quite rare for me, to be honest. I tend to either do one or other, and it's basically it's only with you when or I kind of be in the we kind of can go in the middle and flip one way or the other.
Is that because you don't have that relationship with other people, or is it because of the difficulty of like slipping between the two?
Oh, that's a good question. I probably don't have that kind of relationship with other people, and I don't particularly go out and seek these kind of scenes.
Mm.
With other people, as you know, I talk with them a lot before actually meeting them.
Yeah.
So we kind of have a pretty good idea of, okay, you're looking to sub to me, or I'm looking to sub to you, that kind of thing.
I mean, I think there's also an element that, like, when we do it, it's quite spontaneous, because we're at a point where we don't necessarily fully plan in advance our scenes anymore. Because we've been...
That's true.
We've been doing this for, 4 years together, near enough?
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, it can be hard slipping between that with people.
Mm.
And I think that's one of the other misconceptions. Sometimes, like, you'll see switch in a profile, and people will go, oh, that means you can happily do both at any point. It's just like, well, kind of, but not really. Like, it's that whole thing of, like, warm up the water before you put the pasta in type of thing, you know? Like, get yourself to a point and then let them go, rather than just assuming it's automatically going to cook, you know?
Yeah.
That was a terrible analogy.
sorry, because I'm thinking of another analogy. I don't know if this is appropriate, so please do feel free to stop me on this one.
Okay.
It's the whole thing about people not liking switches a bit like biphobia.
I mean, I can see where you're coming from, but I wouldn't say that they're a perfect analogy, but I think there's maybe some parallels in the whole thing about, like, oh, you've got to be one or the other. But, like, I don't think it's necessarily the same.
Well, no, obviously not. I'm not trying to equate the two, because, you know, there's clearly more problems with biphobia than switch phobia. If you like.
I mean, I'm not bisexual, so, like, I don't feel...
No.
...comfortable making that comparison. But I can see certain parallels in terms of people being like, oh, you've got to be one or the other, etc.
Yeah, basically. Mm. Well, what I know is we have definitely got bisexual listeners out there.
Oh, yeah. I'd be interested to hear from any of our bisexual listeners if they think there's similarities.
Mm. Yeah, maybe a bisexual switch. No, that's cool. That's really cool.
I mean, if you're a bisexual switch, like, let us know. I mean, like, that's kind of like the ultimate position, surely, is like bisexual switch versatile.
Yes.
Because it's just like, you have all of the choices. I say that with love, so if I'm out of line saying that, I apologize.
Oh, no, I don't see why anybody would take it bad.
No, I'm queer, I'm not bi, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that might be most of what I would want to throw out there at the moment.
Okay, so I have got one more small thought.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing I see on the scene a lot is...
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of subs, but not a lot of doms. Like,
right.
This is actually a thing that I see. So, is it better to dom and not have a sub scene, so just to have some play, than to have a switch scene?
Essentially, it's utilitarianism where it comes to BDSM roles.
Mm. Yeah.
To which I'm going to point out, I've never been particularly great at that. For me, it's very much a case of if I'm in a particular space, like headspace, and I'm looking for a particular thing,
yeah,
that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I actually don't tend to switch on the scene that much, and that's maybe a little bit of internalized thing with that, but like if I'm on the scene, I tend to be more dominant.
Hmm.
Partly because that's what people are more familiar of seeing from me, because they're used to seeing me with you, etc. Because usually if I'm on the scene, I'm with yourself.
Fair enough.
Plus also, I tend to be more on the dominant side of things anyway, because I tend to be dom switch more than switch.
Yeah. Whereas, interestingly, at the Bristol scene, people genuinely think of me as a switch now.
Is that because they've seen you with me and with your husband, though?
Probably, yeah. That is possible.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
That is possible. I don't know.
I really don't have an answer to why that is. I think a little bit of it with me is probably a little bit of a self-driven thing.
Yeah.
That I just tend to be in that space. But also, like, quite a few of my friends tend to be on the more submissive side and tend to be slightly more submissive with me.
I mean, it's not surprising. Like, we've talked about this.
I don't know what you mean. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just a self-imposed thing in that respect for me, but, like, I don't think there's necessarily a utilitarianism to it. I think it's a case of it's what I'm in the mood for at that particular moment.
Okay. Right. I think I agree with that. I just thought of that question.
No, that's fair. I think it's a fair question. It's just not one that... It's not one I actively think about.
Mm.
I mean, if a guy comes over to me and I think he's hot and it turns out he's dom, then yeah, I'll probably end up being more on my submissive side of things. Like, maybe there is a little bit of utilitarianism in that respect, but it's more like, tends to be more based on the headspace I'm in that moment.
Hmm. So, yeah. You know I have got the whole setting up a playroom thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? So, I have got at least two guys who talk to me who are interested in subbing to me. When right. that is all set up and stuff, when I'm ready for them.
Mm-hmm. Always nice to have ready customers.
Yeah. But obviously, at some point, I want to be the sub in it as well.
Don't worry, I can make that happen. No, but I mean, that's kind of the advantage of having your own space to do that,
yeah.
isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure a lot of doms can, you know, take advantage of, you know, a dedicated space for mm-hmm. play.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. I mean, Airbnb that shit. Wait, no, that needs to be a thing. Is that a thing already?
It is a thing already, yeah. Yeah, Kink BNB. How did I not know this? I think it is Kink BNB. I think it is a thing.
Okay, wait, I didn't know this was a thing. So it looks like that's been temporarily paused, but that absolutely was a thing. And mm-hmm. it's only last year that it was paused, so it might just be on pause because of COVID.
Yeah, it would make sense. Like, you don't
yeah,
want to
absolutely.
Be like, you're sharing out those spaces in the pandemic.
I mean, if for any reason that's not coming back, someone ought to get on that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yeah, okay. Like that's wait, no, just put it on Airbnb as an experience.
Oh, God.
It's a thing they do now. It's maybe not what they intended it for.
All right, so I have a thought.
Okay, should I be worried?
Yes. How do you indicate to your play partner that it is now the time to switch? Because obviously we've had that problem when, you know, you were doming me and then I am in this sub position and I don't feel like I can just take over.
Yeah. You see, this is a weird one because it's like, I think it very much depends who you're playing with.
Mm.
So if I'm going to switch with someone, usually I don't switch mid-session.
Yeah, okay.
And by mid-session, like, I'm considering that basically being... And this is not really what a session is,
no.
But just for the sake of kind of explaining this. Like, in fact, let's call it mid-flow. Like, and the flow being, like, from the start of the play in roles starting to the point of either both partners orgasming or getting to a point akin to that where there's a natural lull.
Mm-hmm.
With me and you, it's slightly different.
Yeah.
And I actually find it kind of weird because it's... One thing we've maybe not touched on is that, like, it can be oddly distressing in a way.
Distressing.
I get to the point that I want... Yeah. Well, no, and this is maybe a thing of me being not non-neurotypical, but, like, sometimes the mood will take me where it's just like, okay, I'm being dumb and I'm being dumb, but I'm not 100% able to tilt over to that space. And there'll be something that'll make me tilt slightly back and go, you know what, actually, I could go under right now. And I think part of that is the fact that, like, this usually happens with us when it's not quite so heavy a session.
Ah, okay.
And so that's a bit of a weird thing. And it's honestly just a case of, I just talk to you or to, like, on the rare occasion it's happened with another partner, which I think it's maybe only been once. Like, it's just a case of going, hey, like, can we just check in with each other for a second?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's essentially like a soft safe word scenario. It's like, okay, this is where my head's at right now. Like, do you fancy, like, switching things up a bit?
Okay.
And to be honest, like, I don't really think it's that different from any other adjustment to a scene.
No, it's true.
I mean, is it that different to... Okay, maybe it is, but, like, I think you'll get where I'm going with this. Like, let's say you're having a corporal punishment session.
Yeah.
And you're like, you're fine doing this hard bit, you're doing this hard bit, you're doing this hard bit, and then something ticks over and it's like, okay, I'm not there anymore. Like, take it back. And, like, one or the other person saying to the other one, it's like, okay, I need you to just walk that back a little bit for me. It's not really that different, if you think about it. It's just negotiation of what you want in the scene.
Yeah, but the... Ooh. That's tricky, because the perspective is completely... That is complete 180.
Yeah, I'll grant you that. I mean... But then again, isn't that how it goes sometimes? It's you know... There are times we consent to things because we think we're up for it and it starts and, you know, actually it turns out we're not. And it's just like, well, you know what? I need to discuss this and change what I've consented to. And that's A-okay. It's what it is.
Yeah. Alternatively, you can have the whole thing negotiated and it's like, okay, we, you know, this happens for however long. And then, yeah, I'll turn my back on you and then you can pretend that you you can pretend you've got out of your restraints and then subdue me that way.
Exactly. And it's like there's multiple kind of scenarios, I guess, for want of a better word, that you can roll this in with.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it comes down to just discussing this beforehand if you are aware that you need to discuss this beforehand. And I think the tricky thing comes when, like, you're in the middle of a session and you maybe get... Because to me, it's happened where it's just like, I've actually wanted to sub because I've had a moment of dom drop.
Sure.
It's like, I'm in the space, and then it'll drop out. And it's like, you know what? I'm not quite there right now. Do you want to try switching roles and see if this continues? Because at times it'll be like, okay, I've had dom drop. I don't necessarily want to stop the session, but I'm just not quite there. Like, if I'm playing with you, for example, it's just like, do you fancy switching it around so that we can, like, keep going, but sort of take that pressure off me for a moment sort of thing? So I think it just comes down to how you communicate with your partner.
Yeah. I mean, this all happens within one sort of, not one scene, but one kind of meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of imagining, you know, if you have two switches kind of live together. And it's kind of like in a typical porn video scenario, you know, they kind of, I don't know, play a game of poker or something and whoever wins gets to dom that day.
I mean, for some couples, that's what it'll be. And, like, the thing is, like, you do get switch couples.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And I've known other switch couples, and it's like, the way they do it is it just depends what mood they're in at the time.
Yeah.
It might be he gets the T's and I get the S's. It might be, you know... And to clarify, I mean, like, he gets Tuesday, Thursday, I get Saturday, Sunday, whatever. It might be sort of every day is different sort of thing. Like, there's any number of ways to connect this together. It just depends on what you negotiate.
Yeah. That's great.
And it's a bit of a weird thing, like I say, because I would say that when I do it with you, it's maybe atypical to what I would negotiate with another Switch generally. But that comes because of how long we've been together.
Oh, yeah. I think the connection definitely makes a big difference.
Yeah. I mean, I probably wouldn't do a Switch session with someone that I'm just doing, like, a one-off or whatever with. Mm-hmm. I mean, I mentioned earlier we'd played with a friend of ours. That wasn't even pre-negotiated to be a Switch session. That was a case of we hit a natural lull in that night.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we were having just a general talk afterwards, and it came up, well, actually, you know, I quite like to Switch now again. And they were like, oh, well, so do I. It's just like, oh, well, should we try it, sir? And it's just like, okay. Yeah,
okay, okay.
So it's just like, honestly, in my experience, these things are quite natural.
I try to set up a Switch session with someone and then kind of just gave up halfway. I don't know. I'm terrible at this. I can just stop talking to people randomly. And yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I try not to do that these days. Like, not, I try not to just completely walk away from a conversation. Yeah.
I mean, it comes down to the individual and what you negotiate, doesn't it? I mean, it also comes down to what both people are looking for.
Yeah.
Like, if someone's looking for, I don't know, like a 24/7 houseboy type thing,
Maybe
90% likely you're not looking for switching in that scenario.
Yeah, because you know? Are definitely looking for someone who is completely obedient to you all the time. More or less.
Well, this is what I was going to say. Like, you might be, or you might be looking for someone where that is the norm, and you can say to them once in a while, it's just like, okay, I want to do a bit of role reversal, like, you can do this to me, but here's your limits. Because that's something I've done with you before.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, okay, I want to be submissive, but I want to be submissive, but you are still my boy, so here's, like, X, Y, and Z limit.
Yeah.
And, like, for us, that's usually like, okay, you've got to maintain your chastity, or you've got to maintain whatever, you know?
And it depends on how you do it, you know? I've known some, like, doms up relationships where the sub gets to be in the quote unquote dominance role, but they still maintain all the protocols. Even if you're, you know, the sub is flocking their dom, they're still calling them sir and that kind of thing. And yeah,
I mean, as with anything, it comes down to it's what you negotiate.
Yeah,
I mean, there's even some couplings that I know of where it's just like, okay, they're a dom with their partner, and they're a dom with their partner, and their partner is submissive to them, but they also have a submissive themselves. And some people like refer to this as like alpha, beta, etc. in the pup scene.
Yeah.
It probably happens elsewhere as well, but the pup scene's where I'm familiar with it. But like,
not just in the pup scene. I mean, alpha slaves, beta slaves, they're a thing.
And it's like that for some people. That's how they get their sort of Switch side of things satisfied.
True.
You know?
Yeah, that's true.
It's very much an individual thing, and I think that's the very key thing on this. It's very individualized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's all I really would say. Like, the only thing I'd say is, like, sometimes there is a little bit of thing to bear in mind as well, that, like, it's not quite so easy to necessarily speak up and go, hey, I want to go in the opposite direction right now.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, sometimes it might get linked with Dom Dropper, it might get linked with that sort of image that you get in your head of, oh, I need to be this and I need to be that, and like there might be that reservation to say, hey, I want to go the other way, because there is stigma to it. Like, there people is. Do get weirdly stigmatic about it.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I don't think there's much to add to the topic at this point.
No. So No, not from me. So if that's the teabag over.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably the teabag steeped. Should we Shall we switch it up and do the 5-minute Marvel?
It's
a terrible pun. So we need to talk about Hawkeye, because we've not talked about Hawkeye yet.
No, we haven't.
Or should we just call it what it is, which is Marvel's Die Hard?
Marvel Die Hard.
It is. I'm sorry, but everything about that trailer is just screaming Die Hard to me. Which means that we're going to end up with a debate of, is Hawkeye a Christmas series?
I mean, it is positioning themselves as a Christmas series. There is no debate about that.
Yes, but so did Die Hard. And arguably, Die Hard is or isn't a Christmas movie, depending who you talk to.
Die Hard is a Christmas movie. There is no debate about that.
Can we anyway. Just talk about how fucking cool Jeremy Renner is playing this, though? Like, Jesus Christ, this is amazing so far. And it's not even out yet, but it's just like, I am all the way there with the trailer.
Okay. I am particularly enamored with Rochester Musical. I hope after the series is over, they just put out a bonus episode. It's just the entire show of Rochester Musical.
You know what I want? I want them to bring Lin-Manuel Miranda in to actually make it a thing.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Bring Lin-Manuel Miranda in to do the lyrics and everything, and Taika Waititi in to film it and make it a Christmas special. It doesn't have to be this year. It's like, fine, we've missed it this year. We're getting Guardians of the Galaxy this year. Give us that next year.
Yeah.
Come on, Disney. Like, you can have that one for free. Come on. Although, I do have a theory about Hawkeye.
All right.
Which is, I think I know who the main bad guy is.
Oh.
Or at least, like, one of the main bad guys. Because I could be wrong. I don't think it's been revealed who it's going to be yet. Like, no. All we know is it's going to be Hawkeye training Kate Bishop, right?
Yeah.
This is already known. Kate Bishop, Young Avengers. I'm not going to fall down that rabbit hole again. But have you paid attention to the visuals that they're using for the title sequences and for the Marvel logos? Because it wouldn't be the first time that Marvel's revealed a villain that way. The Marvel Studios logo that they use and the bullseyeing that they do.
Yeah.
Every time they do it, it appears with an arrow, apart from once.
Okay.
But here's the thing. The exact patterning that they use for that bullseye is not a standard bullseye. It is a black and silver bullseye.
True.
There is a character called Bullseye in the Marvel Universe that uses a black and silver bullseye.
That's true.
Who else to put up against Hawkeye?
Mm.
So I'm going to put my money down now and say, like, I think we're going to see Bullseye in the MCU in this.
Okay.
Whether he's the main bad guy or he's just, like, the main henchman of the main bad guy, I don't know. But I think we are going to see Bullseye cast in this.
That's not a bad shout, to be fair. Yeah.
Like, if you look at the way they're doing the Marvel Studios logos and everything in that, like, it's there.
Yeah. Okay. I agree.
I'm also loving the characterization of Kate Bishop. There are arrows more deadly than this one?
Well, yeah.
It's like that, and then Jeremy Renner's face is like, yeah, okay. It's like, clearly we have the straight man and the comedian here, and I'm good for this. The interesting thing to me is going to be how they're going to explain one, Kate Bishop's origin, because they've changed it. And two, like, how are they going to link this into Kate Bishop running a team? Because I think that's what we're going to see. I think it's going to be a case of Kate Bishop brings together the Young Avengers.
You think so?
And are we going to see that tease off the end of this? Or is the end of this going to tease us into something like Homecoming?
I don't know.
Far From Home.
No Way Home. I don't think there are enough youngsters still. Because, you know, I know Wiccan and Speed has appeared, but they are currently dead.
Yeah. But again, this depends what comes off the back of the multiverse.
Of course, but, you know,
as which is due to come out halfway through this series.
No,
it is. Spider-Man Far From Home is due to come out halfway through.
Okay. I thought you were referring to
Doctor
Strange 2.
We've got multiverse appearing in No Way Home, and we've got this coming in when that's going to come out halfway through. So there is a chance.
There is a chance, just, but still, that's a Doctor Strange thing, because what are they
thinking? Excelsior!
And that we'll next leave week, that I guess. Debate till next time.
But no, it's, you know, it's an interesting time for Marvel. Let's leave it at that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So lots to come, right?
Indeed. So let's move on to stirring the pot, as it were. What's on your joystick, Chris? Because I did say to you last week we ought to try and find something appropriately horror or spooky related. Have you managed to?
Does Robin Morningwood Adventure count? Because I have come across a demon in that game.
Go on.
Okay.
I'll tell you if it does or not once I know what you're going about with this.
Well, he's a demon, and he...
Well, do we want to start with explaining what Robin Morningwood is? Because I know you've mentioned it once before, but like that was last series.
Yes, that's true.
So for anyone who's recently joined us, do you want to just quickly explain what it is?
So Robin Morningwood is an indie, not safe for work, bar RPG set in the medieval village of Welcome.
Okay.
Where every villager is gay. And
right.
Very, very muscly as well. With lots of body hair.
I'm in this game and I don't like it.
And as okay. you complete tasks for the villagers, you start to get into a relationship with them. And once you build up enough... what's the word?
Fuck points?
If you like, kind of affinity, that's the word. Enough affinity, they will give you their underwear as a love, as a present.
Okay.
Their favourite underwear. And, you know, this is the kind of game we're talking about. And at the latest release, you come across this demon character who lives... underneath the village, and he runs a dungeon for orcs where humans are enslaved and orcs are
is this the October update?
No.
It was
August update.
The orc. Oh, they missed a trick with that. It's October. Put it in October. And I'm going to take a little moment here to just, like, promote that Kinky Boys is doing a bonus episode, and I think they're talking about October.
Oh, yes.
So, like, that's just a nice little quick shout-out. Yeah. But carry on.
So, yeah. So that's a demon character who has been enslaving humans and releasing some gas of some sort into the village and makes everyone in the village super horny.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounded like the villagers were already pretty highly strung sex-wise.
Yeah, but that has been going on for years and years without the villagers knowing, and I have only just discovered it.
Oh, okay.
So, and then the villagers kind of come together and have a meeting and decide to just let it keep running because, you know, the high sex drive suit them just fine.
They come together and have a meeting.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, sidestepping the issues of consent that this brings up, okay. I mean, I guess it lends a reason for the rest of the games. The more I hear about this, the more it's just that out there that I think I want to try it. Like, just as a, like, this seems, like, so... far-fetched. It's like the whole, like, KFC daddy dating sim that happened a while ago. It was just like, okay, that's just what? And this is striking me as very much one of those games, but it's just like, it very much seems like I may have to just go and experience this one myself.
Yeah, fair.
Go on, I'll let you have that one, because there is a demon in it, I guess. It's probably a little bit closer than mine, but I don't know, I'll let you get to that. So right. Mine is, I've been playing Metroid Dread.
Oh, right, okay.
Which, on its face, doesn't sound like it's going to be, like, a spooky or scary game. No, like, Metroid Dread has the atmosphere down pat. Like, that game is so good. Like, singing its praises just in general for a moment, The movement in that game is so fluid, it's untrue. I have yet to find a game that plays better on the Switch. Mm-hmm. The premise of the game is straightforward and you can get into it quick. Like, there's been a whole deal made out of this being a sequel to the previous 2D Metroid. You don't need to play them.
Okay.
The game tells you enough before you go in.
Fair enough.
So you know what you're doing.
That's good.
This is the first 2D Metroid game that I know of that has the fully animated cutscenes and everything, and it's just fucking gorgeous. Like, the game is honestly breathtaking, especially when you consider it's on a Switch. And yes, I have seen the 4K emulation version of it, and it, just, it stands up. Like, even like on the handheld, it stands up even without that. But the reason why I'm kind of putting this in and going like, this is kind of like, it's not horror as such, but it's like that whole like chills down the spine related thing. Mm. There's an enemy in that called the Emmy. And this is not really spoilers because this was in all of the sort of marketing materials. It will stalk you the fuck down. And I don't mean it will follow you on a little path around this 2D thing. No, like it will literally like if you get. Let's say you manage to go on one platform, you cross it, etc., as it's going the other way. No, it will notice and it will turn the fuck around and chase you. And it won't just chase you on the platform you're on. It will, like, there's shortcuts and everything that it can take to get around you and it tracks you down.
All right.
And the game tracks whether your movement would make noise, and if your movement would make noise, it moves towards the noise. It can scan through walls. It's fascinating and it's fucking terrifying because the audio cue as well. Yeah. I highly recommend playing the game with headphones or on a good sound system because you hear the music. You hear, like, they've got a very particular noise that they make. And the moment you start hearing that noise, your heart starts going because you know that you have got to fucking do this right or it's going to screw you. Like, there are times it has took me the better part of an hour to try and work out how the fuck I get around this thing.
Yeah, I didn't know Metroid did that. Okay.
Yeah, this is something in the new ones, and it's scary. It's legitimately scary.
All right. Okay. If you say so, like, I don't know.
It's one of the first. Yeah. It's one of the first times one of those like 2.5D type graphic games have like pulled that like emotion in, and it's just like, oh Jesus. Mm. And it's violent, like, if they catch you with, like, that cutscene is violent.
Wow.
Like, if it catches you, you have two opportunities to get away.
Yeah.
It's like, play like a 4 or 5 second cutscene of what it does to you. And there's two opportunities in there to try and get away. But the timing on those counters is so frame perfect, you have damn near no chance of doing it.
Okay.
And there will be times that, like, you do it and you will get, like, an animation that you tried. And it's fucking terrifying. And I love it. Like, that game. Usually I'll buy a new game and I'll put it in and I'll be jumping between that game and whatever I was playing just before it.
Yeah.
I haven't played anything else.
Okay.
Like, wow. I've just been solidly playing Metroid Dread.
Wow. That's
funny. I'm, like, down to the last boss right now and it's, like, they're kicking my ass.
Mm-hmm. So.
I don't know if that counts for the scary thing, but like it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, if it scares you, then, I mean, maybe, yes. I think it's good enough, right? So, I mean, we're never actually going to do...
Oh, you were never getting a horror game out.
Never going to do Five Nights at Freddy's or something like that, right? No.
But I mean that's what's been on my joystick this week, and I thought it was appropriate as well. It's just like it's a Switch game on the Switch episode.
Ah, clever.
But I think that's everything for this week. I think we've covered everything, unless I missed something.
No, I think that is it.
Yeah.
Nothing.
So if they want to find us or tell us what they think of Switching or anything like that, where can they find us, boy?
You can find us on social media as TBNJ Podcasts. Find us on all the links at Linktree, which is linktr.ee/ TBNJ Podcast.
It's the standard Linktree URL with the ending of TBNJ Podcast.
Yeah, linktr.ee.
linktr.ee/ TBNJ Podcast. And you can find us anywhere that you get your podcasts. Like, please give us a thumbs up, a star, or whatever it is on your... podcast platform, because it does help others find us.
Yes.
You can also leave us a voice message if you want.
At anchor.fm/TBNJpodcast.
Yes. But for now, I have been Si.
And I've been Chris.
Have a happy Halloween, and we shall see you in a couple of weeks. Goodbye.
Bye. This episode was edited by TBNJ Chris. Our soundboard comprises royalty-free audio. The opening and ending music is Quarter Conundrum by DOAK. Thank you for listening to Teabags and Joysticks. And now for Sai's rant on Ready Player 2.
So just to give you a little bit of an explanation on how bad it was. So James Halliday, who is the creator of the Oasis in Ready Player One, created a clone of his mind using this technology and made it into the world's first real AI, but he tried to edit his memories out. He also, without permission and without consent, cloned the brain of his friend's wife because he was in love with her. And was hoping that he could get the virtual version of her to fall in love with him. And then the premise is that the AI version of himself that he corrupted ends up taking over the system and trapping everybody in the system because of this quest to try and bring the AI girlfriend back, because the AI version of him thinks that it's smarter and can make her love him, etc. It's a car crash. It's bad. It's so bad.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds really bad.
And they do the whole ship in a bottle thing.
Yeah.
Where, like, they've created a spaceship with a version of the Oasis that they're going to go to because the planet is fucked. Well, the AI version's planning to get away in that. It's like, that's the Chekhov's gun, but it's just so poorly executed. And then at one point, it's just like, I had a plan. We'd talk with Oasis engineers, and then it doesn't tell you what the plan is. And you look at it, it's just like, I know what the plan's going to be. You're going to create a fake of all the fucking quest items, and then you're going to fool the other AI into thinking that that was it, what it was. It's just like, it's Sorrento's chair all over again. Like, seriously? Like, it's... The thing is, they then don't tell you what the plan is for the next 100 and or so pages. And you just sat there just like, I know it's coming. Just get to it.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, I'm sorry.
I tell you what, I would put this after the outro.
Yeah, I mean, just put another spoiler warning on it if you want. It's bad. It's so bad. Literally sat there hate reading. So like...